from Storyflow. This is your daily audio brief for July 3rd. It's Iris, July 3rd. 10 stories evidence-led, no fluff, small inputs compound. Let's get into it. First, from Mongabay, rare fungi help restore Palmyra Atoll rainforests, new study finds. Here's how. Palmyra Atoll in the North Pacific is one of the most remote island systems on Earth. A native rainforest tria on the island performs a critical ecological service by providing nesting sites for thousands of seabirds, whose guano fuels the surrounding coral reefs. But a new study revealed that this entire cycle depends on an invisible partner, symbiotic mycorrhizal fungi. Researchers mapped the fungal diversity across the atoll and discovered the native Pisonia grandis trees have a 100% with a specific genus of fungi called Tomentella, meaning the trees depend on the fungi to survive. These fungi capture intense pulses of nitrogen and phosphorus from bird guano that would otherwise wash into the ocean. This relationship was present in every tree the team sampled. Most ectomycorrhizal fungi struggle in extremely nutrient-rich soils, but the Tomentella fungi associated with Pisonia appear to be adapted to the high phosphorus levels created by seabird guano, study co-author Alex Wegman told Mongabay over email. This suggests a long evolutionary partnership between the fungi, the trees, and the massive seabird colonies that shape these atoll ecosystems. The discovery has major implications for the ongoing effort to restore Palmyra's native forests by removing 1.5 million invasive coconut palms. The study found that Tomentella abundance drops off sharply when there are more than 250 meters, 820 feet away from a Pisonia tree. Therefore, natural regeneration might fail in large areas cleared of coconut palms because the necessary fungi aren't present in the soil. The study. This article was originally published on Mongabay. Next, second from New Atlas. Morphing, color, changing liquid stores energy by charging into a gel. Energy storage usually brings to mind batteries, capacitors, tanks of hydrogen, or maybe some giant gravity system hauling blocks up a tower. Northwestern University researchers have now demonstrated something a lot stranger. A yellow liquid that charges by rebuilding itself into a black gel, stores electrons for months, then releases them on demand to drive chemical reactions. Category: energy engineering. Up next, third from New Atlas. A hidden map in your nose may hold the secret to smell. Scientists have just shown that the nose isn't just a random tangle of smell sensors, it actually contains a tiny, orderly map. In a single mouse study, researchers used high-resolution imaging to track activity across the olfactory epithelium and found that neighboring neurons tend to respond to chemically similar odorants, forming a spatial pattern much like the maps we see in the retina or the skin. The team combined this imaging with gene expression profiling, confirming that clusters of receptors with related molecular signatures line up together. It's a neat piece of evidence that the peripheral olfactory system already does some of the sorting we usually think the brain handles. It's still early, the work is limited to mice, and the map's exact shape in humans isn't known yet, but the finding adds a concrete layer to how we understand smell, suggesting the nose itself starts organizing scents before the brain even gets involved. And then, fourth from Big Think, the myth of genius, and who it intentionally leaves out, Xena Hitz, a philosopher who stepped away from a promising academic track to spend 3 years washing dishes in a monastery, argues that thinking isn't the exclusive domain of degree holders. She points out that the structures of elite universities often gatekeep what counts as real philosophy, leaving out voices that don't fit the traditional mold. In her talk, she suggests that the most authentic philosophical work can be found among people who live ordinary lives. Taxi drivers, office clerks, prisoners, because they confront the world without the safety net of scholarly jargon. Their everyday experiences, she says, force them to wrestle with the same big questions that occupy any philosopher, just without the institutional trappings. Hitz isn't dismissing formal education entirely. She acknowledges that training can sharpen tools, but she warns that the myth of the solitary genius can obscure the contributions of those who lack credentials yet think deeply. By expanding who we count as philosophers, we might uncover insights that academic circles routinely overlook. Takeaway is simple. Intellectual curiosity isn't limited to ivory towers. We let go of the prestige filter. We open ourselves to a richer, more inclusive conversation about what it means to think and live wisely. Next, fifth from New Atlas. Winnebago's affordable new B-plus camper looks to hook noobs on RV life. Winnebago's just rolled out the Alora Husa, a B-class motorhome that feels more like stepping into a new car than a traditional RV. It's compact enough to maneuver like a van, yet it packs the comforts you'd expect. Full kitchen, bathroom, and sleeping space, so first-time RVers can get on the road without a steep learning curve. What makes it stand out is the price. It's tens of thousands cheaper than most of Winnebago's camper van offerings, and the interior layout is designed for intuitive use, with controls and storage place where you'd expect them in a regular vehicle. In short, it's a low-key, budget-friendly entry point for anyone curious about life on the move. Up next, 6th from Fies.org. Bottle. Nose dolphins in the Adriatic Sea seem to be heavily reliant on trawlers for food. Scientists watching the Adriatic coast recorded dolphins hanging out with fishing trawlers, and the pattern is striking. In a field observation covering dozens of trawlers off March, about three-quarters of the vessels had dolphins trailing them, suggesting the animals are relying on the discarded catch rather than hunting on their own. The researchers note that bottom trawling has stripped the seabed of many larger predators, leaving bottle-nosed dolphins as the main apex species. Because the trawlers stir up the bottom and dump leftovers, the dolphins can snag food with far less effort, but the high association rate hints they may be struggling to find prey in the altered ecosystem. If this behavior holds across the wider Adriatic, it could mean the dolphins are adapting to a degraded environment, but also that their natural foraging skills are being compromised. The observation doesn't prove cause and effect, yet it flags a potential concern for the health of the dolphin population and the broader marine community. And then, 7th from the Hukut Wake Up. Happy National Wildland Firefighter Day. From the bug-filled black spruce swamps in Alaska to the unforgiving timbered terrain of the Dilla, the sagebrush fires in the basin that go on for miles, across the deciduous fires out east, to the steeps of Colorado, and to the tall trees of the Pacific Northwest, the Wai of California, and the Shi. At County in the Northern Rockies, The work takes more than a day, as thousands of wildland firefighters across the nation come off the line this evening, eat a plate of food, and climb into their sleeping bags overlooking the fire they just burned 5,000 calories on. They know it will take more than a day to stop that thing. So, while today is National Wildland Firefighter Day, tomorrow is too, because at 5:00, the very same sleeping bag the firefighter climbed into will start to stir again. Boots tied tight, nicotine and caffeine binge begins, and a hike back into the very same fire that provided a night light on the mountaintop. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And because it's a marathon, you need people to motivate and cheer you on for all 26 miles. Even when you vomit halfway through or you're bleeding from chafing, those who watch from the bottom of the mountain are with you day by day. That's how you make it to the finish line. Stay strong, stay savage, and stay together. Happy National Wildland Firefighter Day. Your support allows us to donate generously to firefighter charities and supports all of our content. You also receive all of our article archives, more podcast episodes, Monday morning workouts, and also entered into our giveaways, plus more. Next, 8th from FIES.org. The center has shifted. Multifunctional facility in Japan reshapes where people linger. I just read a new study that actually tracked how people move around after a big mixed-use building opened in a mid-sized Japanese city. The researchers used anonymized mobile phone data to compare foot traffic in the neighborhood before the facility opened, after it opened, and against similar districts that didn't get a new project. What they found was a modest but clear uptick in the amount of time residents spent strolling, shopping, or grabbing a coffee within a 500-meter radius of the new hub, about a 12% rise compared with the control areas. The effect wasn't limited to the building itself. Nearby streets and small shops also saw a small boost in visits. It suggests that well-placed, multifunctional sites can nudge people back toward older town centers, even if the overall shift toward car-centric malls continues. It's still early evidence, but the design is solid enough to think about similar projects elsewhere, especially where local businesses need a gentle pull. Up next, 9th for Matriarchal Blessing. Discussion Roundtable. Is criticizing Ballerina Farm anti-feminist? 2 weeks ago, Hannah Nealeman of Ballerina Farm gave her second-ever interview to a major publication. This time, it was to Vulture with the headline, Ballerina Farm is happy with her choices. One a very familiar debate has broken out in the comments section of the article. On one hand, feminism today is about choice and authenticity. She is not forcing any woman to do anything or be anything. And on the other, one of the major issues here is that this lifestyle is presented as a choice, and for this specific influencer, it genuinely may be. But within high-control religious groups, there is actually little to no choice for women. And these are the groups, demographics, who are predominantly promoting and propagating the tradwife lifestyle. This debate that tends to arise anywhere Ballerina Farm is discussed is really about choice feminism. If you want to get pregnant every year and bake sourdough bread every day, do you? Just don't judge the woman that makes other choices. Leave this woman alone. And then, 10th from South Dakota Voices. Uranium mine in SD. Reasonable. The Encore Energy Dewey Burdock ASR Uranium Project, located southwest of Custer near the South Dakota-Wyoming state line, was issued a license by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for In-Situ Recovery, ISR. ISR is a minimally invasive, eco-friendly approach to mineral extraction. It is a successful technique for obtaining uranium. Unlike traditional mining, ISR doesn't involve open pits, waste dumps, or tailings, so it is more environmentally friendly. The uranium is extracted without disturbing the surface, and once the process is complete, the plant is removed and the land is restored to its original state. The final product, yellowcake, is relatively benign. Transporting yellowcake is classified as a hazardous operation, but it poses a relatively low radiological risk. The material is a naturally occurring heavy metal and emits alpha radiation that is blocked by the skin or standard packaging. Here is how the ISR process works. According to Emily Domnich, Permitting Council Executive Director, increasing the domestic production of uranium is critical to national security and energy dominance, and will play a pivotal role in accelerating the deployment of nuclear energy to meet growing electricity demand. How do you feel about having this type of uranium extraction in the South Dakota? The primary danger during transit comes from inhaling the dust. That's the read. Small inputs, compounding results. Back tomorrow.